Welcome to The Download. My guest today is a stand-up comedian who just released her latest special, The Pride of Western Springs, Cameron Esposito.
In the last year, by watching people step forward and like tell their stories about harassment and assault, hasn't that been beautiful to see that? It's just like, just human grace, just strength like that. It's not like those are new stories, but people standing in their truth and telling them, that's new. I think it's really cool. That's happening. And then right next to that, there's just like a shriveling Nosferatu. What am I supposed to do at work if I can't talk about her sweater? Like, there's just glorious human light and then sweater comments. That's happening at the same time, almost being given, like, the same amount of credibility and, like, just like, no, that sounds tough, sweater comments. Sounds like your life is a prison! I have an answer to that question. What are you supposed to do at work if you can't talk about the clothing or body of your coworkers? Work. Why don't you go ahead and get to work? Statistically, you're probably the boss. Why don't you go ahead and make this company more lucrative so that she can get a raise by even better sweaters that you're still not allowed to say shush out.
Cameron Esposito is a force. The stand-up has gone from a Chicago favorite to a national name with appearances on late-night talk shows, Comedy Central, and the like. She's co-created Take My Wife with her wife, comedian Rhea Butcher, which ran on CISO and now on Stars and iTunes. And she also stars in two very popular podcasts, Put Your Hands Together and Query. As we just heard a minute ago, her latest special is called Rape Jokes, and it was recorded at UCB in L.A. It is inspired by Esposito's own experience with sexual assault and has been lauded as one of the first great stand-up specials of the Me Too era. The proceeds from the special benefit RAIN, the largest U.S. anti-sexual violence organization. Esposito is originally from Western Springs and, of course, spent years here performing stand-up in Chicago. And she's back in studio. Cameron Esposito, thanks for being here.
This is so nice. I'm so happy to be here at, like, the new WGN offices. I feel kind of cool.
It's
like
great
in on the ground floor.
How often do you get back to town?
You know, not as often as I used to. A lot of times I'm coming in and out for a show, although I will always try to have this be like the end or the beginning so that I can see my folks a little bit. Most recently, to prepare for this special, I did something I haven't done like since I moved. I rented the Den Theater in Wicker Park.
Absolutely, I know, right.
It's on Milwaukee, it's right. Rad. Yeah, it's right in Milwaukee. It's a, I think I was in a 50-seat room, and I did 14 shows there, as opposed to the Vic, which is the last place I played before that, and the place that I'm going to be in
and
the fall.
And the goal was to work it out.
Yeah, to be in town, to feel a little bit like a local comic again, so I'm actually getting audience engagement and feedback. I would go out on stage with a pen, and I wrote that whole hour kind of sitting down, typing it out, which is not how I usually do it.
Yeah, right.
I usually write as I tour, and then Chicago was where I spent the most time, because I know that Chicago has great audiences, and I got to feel like I was a local for a little bit, like I actually got to go to the open mic that I used to run here, like hang out there. I got to go to some bars, feel bar culture, which Los Angeles does not have. We do not have bar culture. We have a lot of great things.
Right.
We do not have bar culture. And just connect with old friends, but in a way that wasn't just like, hey, I have 15 minutes after the show.
Right. How important is that feeling, that connection for you, to spend the years that you spent, your formidable years here being in Chicago? How important is it to almost harness that feeling, to catch it in a bottle?
Well, the most amazing part of those 14 shows is that I booked a different opener for every show, a different local comic for every show. The last couple of times I've played Chicago, I've brought my wife, Rhea, and either Rhea opened for me or then we were co-headlining. This was so different because it was, I don't know, like the vibe of being in Chicago, staying out all night and like the grind and eating pizza, drinking whiskey, like that's not a thing that's a part of my life anymore.
Right. Well,
it was really cool.
I guess that's where I go with the vibe because there is something about the stand-up scene here in Chicago and and especially when you were coming up, that there was a vibe there, and there still is with the stand-ups that are coming through now that are making their name and moving on, but there was a vibe, and trying to do your best work in that vibe seems to be where I'm going.
Yeah. I mean, the difference is art versus industry. I'm so glad that I came up here because this is really an artist's paradise. The cost of living is much right. lower than in New York or LA, and so you can kind of spend a few years cobbling together a living, and that's what I did. I worked a zillion different day jobs and a zillion different ways of doing comedy to make money, and I, you know, put it all together into a tiny pot and paid my like $300 rent to live in a shared one-bedroom apartment in Logan Square. And like that was awesome for me. You know, it really afforded me the opportunity to care about what I was doing. And then moving to Los Angeles has also been great. But I'm so glad I didn't start there, because it's a totally different thing. By the time you get there, you're a business.
People don't recognize that, too, to talk about the grind of being a stand-up comedian, because as you mentioned the word grind and recreating that experience at the Den. But there is this life that you have to make money, you have to pay the rent for that one bedroom in Logan Square. And you also, when it comes to the grind of actually getting stage time and trying to find different bars that will take comics in the back or be able to show up and do 5 minutes here and then jump to the next place to do 5 minutes and another place to do 5 minutes. There really is a grind when it comes to trying to make it in Chicago.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. There's also a huge pressure between comics. Like, this is a very competitive place artistically. So it's assumed you are going out every night. You're doing three sets, maybe five sets. Otherwise, you don't even care about this thing. You know, you just went up once tonight. You're a hobbyist.
You're a hobbyist.
Yeah. And so it's that dedication coupled with my dad's a small business owner. I think I always kind of approach this like it was a small business, and that's really what it is for me. So that it's like that art, that focus on art, caring about what you're doing, and then approaching it like you're a small business person.
That's great.
You go to LA with those things, that's going to serve you really well.
When you talk about serving yourself well, is it similar in LA when it comes to stand-ups and the grind? I mean, do you have to
No.
do three or four showcases just
No,
to get
totally
up?
It's totally different. I mean, it really is like, it's a day job there. So you can work in comedy during the day. And so there isn't the same focus at night. So like I said, I mean, I like it because I moved there at a time in my life when I'm like married and I kind of wanted to own a couch. You know, I have wild dreams, things
wild
like that.
Wild dreams, right.
And I wanted a chance to maybe live on a slightly more normative schedule. I also travel to do stand-up more than I did when I lived in Chicago. So now it's a job that I do on a national scale. But starting out, like, I know there are people who start in LA. I do not know how.
Right.
For me, it would have been a terrible place to start out. Because you just, the community here, your peers, the support that you're getting from other artists in other arts, like, everybody here who does art kind of knows each other. And there's, like, a weird underground scene where it's like, I mean, I had cool friends here. Everybody that I knew was like a clown in the circus or a roller derby, like skated in the derby or like was a cool modern dancer. Or, I mean, it was rad. It was rad. Thanks, my 20s. I did a good job. I did a good job of living here in my
20s.
Well,
I remember seeing you on stage at Lincoln Lodge, other places like that. And to watch the special, which we're just about to talk about, Cameron Esposito here in studio, to watch how you have evolved. And to watch those shows, the Lincoln Lodge shows were great, and the energy in the room was great, and they were great jokes, but to watch how you command the stage, especially in this special at an LA stage in UCB, it's so impressive. And congratulations on all your success. Talk about how you think you've changed over the last 10 years or whatever, from those days at the Lincoln Lodge to what you're doing in this special.
That's such a good question. It really has been about 10 years since I really was like making my name for the first time here in Chicago coming up. And really, the difference is just that stand-up it's something you are training for. When you up on stage, you're doing reps. It's like you're preparing for the Olympics or something silly like that, except it's not physical at all. And it is kind of physical.
Yeah, it is.
You're training your like your lung capacity and things like that. But to get, you know, I had to just, you work your way up through every room in Chicago. So I had to kind of master like, who's the booker there and get them on my side and work at all those places. And then I had to figure out how to host in other clubs in other cities. And then I had to open for bigger acts in theaters and bomb. I mean, bomb. Worst bomb I've ever had in my life is at the, whatever it's called now, the World Music Theater. Then it was the Tweeter Center. I don't know what it's called.
Yeah,
Tinley Park.
Right.
Where I first saw Beyonce when she was 16 and I was 16, and I, you know, I had all these dreams for going back there and crushing, and instead I totally bombed in front of 30,000 people.
How can
this
anyone
was like
do
a couple
stand
years
up
ago.
At a place like that, though?
No, you can't. It's not so built hard. For it. Absolutely.
Yeah, right.
But I mean, it is amazing. Would you like to know what the sound of 30,000 people not laughing is? It's still pretty loud because they're just like, why is this happening?
Yeah.
I wish that she'd stop talking. But yeah, I feel like it had to. I mean, it's just hours and hours and hours of being on stage. And then now I walk out at a place like the Vic and it doesn't feel big to me. And, you know, I can't wait to be at the Chicago Theater whenever that happens. Wink.
It's coming up. Well,
it's so incremental. It's so incremental.
I think also watching you command your performance and knowing that it might be a first part of a joke and know the second part is coming up and you being able to, with a look, or with a pause, be able to completely command the attention of an audience. And I'm not saying you didn't have that at the Lincoln Lodge, but watching it now on the special, you have perfected it. And that's something that I think you see as the specialness of an audience to watch you 10 years ago and watch you now.
Yeah, that's rad. I love that the work shows, because I think that is really, you know, for me, I started in improv, so taking up space on stage has never been a problem. I had to learn how to write jokes, essentially, and how to be concise. I'm not a super concise person. But you're right, too. I can be very big on stage and what I was trying to do with this particular special because it's more personal than anything I've ever done. And there's also a part where I talk about my experience with sexual assault where it's really not funny and shouldn't be funny. And that's like about 2 minutes, which is the worst feeling as a comic.
Is it?
There's about 2 minutes where
no laughs.
There's no laughs.
Right.
And I know there shouldn't be laughs, but it's still awful. And I also, you know, I'm a glutton for punishment. So what I liked was the idea that I could get people back after that. So bring the show to a screeching halt. Stop the laughter.
There's a lot of risk in it. Obviously,
get folks to laugh
you know,
again.
We'll talk about the Cameron Esposito's my guest. The new special is called Rape Jokes. It's out now. And all the proceeds go to RAIN. It's on your website. And you just donate right there. It's about sexual assault from a perspective of a survivor. You, in this case. You know, the story and being such a personal story to you, and you've done stand-up for 10 years, what took you there? What in the process took you to, it's time for me to get on stage now in front of this audience where I'm at in my career and tell the most personal story that I have?
I just didn't see somebody else in stand-up specifically, because I think stand-up is an art where you can really relax your audience and then teach. You know, it's not preachy. It's like, it's meant to be fun. And I think that is a tool that you can use for social change. I'm somebody who really cares. I'm a gay person. I now look kind of like even more butch than I looked when I lived in Chicago. I mean, I left my leather jacket at home because I thought it was going to be really hot down here. I'm so devastated.
When you turned the corner,
like
the I was like,
greatest motorcycle jacket right now, and I didn't wear it because it was 99 degrees yesterday.
Right.
But yeah, I feel like this was the right avenue for it, and I didn't see somebody else doing it, and I waited. You know, I wanted somebody else. I didn't want to. Who wants to be like, I'm the sexual assault comic? Nobody wants that. But what I didn't see was, we're sold this idea, and it's perpetuated again and again, that comics are one thing. Comics are dudes, and the dudes that are comics don't care about something like sexual assault. They want to joke about it in a lighthearted way, and they want to hurt the audience's feelings, and that's good comedy. And I don't find that to be true in my life. That's not who I am as a comic. And I also think that there are a lot of comics who don't agree with that. They just don't get the press. We talk about even the title of the special, which is like deliberately incendiary, is meant to, I wanted it to be the number one Google result. If you put in rape jokes, I didn't want it to be some article where some guy is waxing philosophic about how censorship is terrible. I wanted it to be like, no, this is like, I want to talk about this topic. Let's use stand up to talk about this
and
topic.
It's not new for you either, because you've talked about this before, about the idea that you don't have a problem with rape jokes. You just want them to be good rape jokes in the way that right now most stand ups just say it's in your special. They just say the word rape and everyone just kind of has a reaction to it. And they somehow find that to be positive reinforcement and they continue to do that joke.
And then those are the only jokes that are written about. And then also what has happened historically is that there's like a woman that'll be interviewed as a counterpoint to that comic. She's usually not a comic. Sometimes she's the audience member that had a problem with it.
Right.
So that's not somebody who has the terminology, the speech. That's not somebody who can say what they want from that comic because they're not a comic.
And they're not making an artistic point by giving feedback in that situation.
Yeah, they're not. Yeah. And I also like, I get a ton of feedback as a comic. I've gotten feedback my entire career. I've gotten a lot of pointed feedback that's just about me as a person. I've gotten feedback about my material, and I feel that the conversation on this it's almost like made the dude comic the victim, you know, where it's like, oh, I can't believe this happened to me. Somebody came to my show and they heckled me. They told me they didn't like this joke. It's like, dude, are you telling me that that has happened to you so few times that you can remember the number of times that it's happened to you? Because I could tell you, like, I can't remember the number of times that's happened.
Well, that's something, too, that you talk about, because I don't think about it that way. But being a gay comic who is playing in a white male-dominated field, you do get a disproportionate amount of feedback. I would assume a lot of dude comics taking you aside saying, this is what I think you should do. This is what I think of your act. This is more than the other guys, right? And I think that I wonder at a certain point that that's not, I guess we don't think about that. In the comedy, there's so much of that going on that probably shouldn't.
Well, I think this is true. I mean, number one, my closest friends are comics because those are my coworkers. I also have I have close friends outside of my industry too, but I have so many, these are my peers. These are people who I like and respect. So most of my experience with fellow comics is like, these are the people who lift me up. These are the people who have my back. Absolutely, I think that when you're a guy and you start doing this job, you have the benefit of respect that I don't think I had. I think I had to earn respect, and I think I have earned it. So that's what I think it's like to be a woman in this field. It's like, you gotta earn it. From audience members, I think that, and from the industry at large, I think that there's this presumption that, like, because I'm a woman, because I'm a gay person, that it's like my audience should be gay people, my audience should be women. But if you're a dude, if you're a straight dude, your audience is everyone.
Right.
Well, I mean, it turns out that I have human experiences, and that's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about being a human being. I'm using my lens because I only ever see the world as out of these gay eyes. I can't not be gay. But you should relate to this. I mean, I go see straight movies. You think I don't go see? You think I don't consume straight culture? It turns out there's a lot of it around, and I consume a lot of it. And I would just say, like, I'm a comic that serves everyone. And do I love that gay people feel seen when they watch me perform? Yes. I'm also happy to be that. But yeah, it's actually on the audience. Like, you are self-selecting.
And I wonder if that's similar with sexual assault survivors, because a lot of times, you talk about this as well, this concept of how society stereotypes sexual assault, that there's a beginning, middle, and end, that there's a stranger, that even in date rape scenario, it's like the after school specials that we've seen, that there's one way to do it and that's it. And if it wasn't in there, then it's, I'm not sure. And I would assume over time that the audiences are relating to this special because your sexual assault experience is one that, as you mentioned in the special, we're getting closer and closer, and as a society, we're getting closer and closer to that edge where more and more of these stories are going to come forward and we are going to have a real conversation about how essentially sexual assault plays out in our culture.
That it isn't always a particularly evil person who knows what they're doing, who is a stranger to you, that it can be somebody who doesn't understand power dynamics, doesn't understand the power that they wield, didn't get sex ed, and that I think honestly it's like I'm leading with empathy. I'm leading with empathy for other survivors first, but I also understand because I had no sex ed, because I sleep with women and I know that there is inherently a power dynamic that women feel. I can relate on both sides, you know, and I think that that's what I'm trying to do, is just start a conversation. It's like there is no easy answer to this. I find, like, that's what I've been taking away from this year. and the Me Too movement is that I'm excited that these conversations are beginning.
Right.
And I what the reason I released the special now, why I wanted to do it as a fundraiser, why I wanted is because I just don't want us to get to the end and have it be about, oh, this is a terrible thing this guy did. Here's the consequences he's going to face. And then now suddenly we're starting these like rehabbed image stories. And it almost was a complete circle where we were just talking about these dudes. Just talking about like the eight guys who are famous and you know their names. As if that's the issue. And I think those men should face consequences. And
right.
I think it's good that we know who they are for real. But I also think like those people being removed from society or rehabbing their images or whatever, those clickbait articles, that would do nothing to change my situation. And most of the people who are speaking, you know, I just want survivors to be centered. I want to hear, like, how did you continue to date after this happened to you? That's, to me, a much more interesting story.
Absolutely. And I also think that the special, obviously, that the big part of the special is about your story and your experiences, your takes and observations on what is happening right now with harassment in the workplace and the Me Too movement are hilarious. And there is a lot that can be, I don't know, resolves not the right word, but at least pointed out by stand-up comedy.
I think so. I also think on that specific point, I mean, what I'm trying to make is, you know, you're treating women differently, right? Like if you think that you have to talk about it, because I know I've seen that from guys. Well, what can I not compliment my coworker on her? Well, it's just literally like, let me ask you a follow-up question. Do you do that to the dudes in your office? Are you like, that shirt fits you really nicely?
It's a really nice shirt.
I mean, it's not even usually like the nice shirt. It's like, no, what I like right. about that shirt is that right. it shows off your body.
Yeah.
I just really think that that shirt is complimenting your waistline. Like, are you talking right. like that to your dude coworkers? Because if you are not, then you are treating your female coworkers like in a really weird way. Like they have to deal with that all the time. Think about how exhausting that is. You're trying to do your job where you get paid less. And then also you're just like, oh my God, can you just like treat me like a buddy? Can you treat me like somebody you respect? Can we just go out to dinner together and talk about work? And it's not weird. Like I just, it doesn't have
weird.
To be so
right.
weird
right.
all the time.
Right. right.
I think that it's good to see celebrities speaking out about this. I'm not putting myself in that category. I'm thinking about like friends of mine, people that made this easier for me. Like I'm kind of casually buddies with Evan Rachel Wood, and she's been so outspoken this last year. And that to me is somebody that it's like, wow, you have such a huge spotlight on you and you're making this choice. That made it easier for me. I'm down the ladder in terms of public exposure. So what I hope is that it makes it down the ladder in terms of public exposure easier for people who don't necessarily have as much public support. Because public criticism also means public support. And I have gotten a lot of public support. I know there are people listening. They go to their jobs. They relate to these experiences
yeah.
that I'm talking about. And they're not going to be able to get like a bunch of people tweeting at them, great job. I'm so proud of you, you know?
That's so true.
So I'm proud of you.
Yeah.
If you're somebody
you
listening
go.
And you can relate, I'm proud of you.
Cameron Esposito is my guest, stand-up comedian. The special is called Rape Jokes. It's on her website, CameronEsposito.com, where you can also do a donation to RAIN, which is the largest U.S. anti-sexual violence organization. You got a show coming up here in September at the Vic.
Yeah, I'm at the Vic September 28th. I'm so excited.
Which you were just telling me, you got to go past the Vic and see your face on the marquee just the other or yesterday or whatever it is.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, my dad and I took my dad. Well, my mom helped me. My mom bought some tickets to the Cubs game, and then I got us on the field for batting practice, which
so
my
great.
Dad was losing his mind. My dad's a lifelong Cubs fan, and this is like, I'm using all my pull at the Cubs for my dad, like all pull I have. But we drove past the Vic on our way to Wrigley last night, and yeah, my face is up there.
I don't want to be hokey, cool. but what's that feel like? What's it feel like to be, you know, to have your face on the Vic for the Cameron Esposito that I knew, that I watched on stage at the Lincoln Lodge and Chicago Underground and all the different places and doing stand-up, to think about your face being on the marquee at the Vic? What kind of emotion does that bring up?
I remember when I opened for Reggie Watts there, and that was a huge deal. I couldn't believe that I was going to work with Reggie. I couldn't believe I was going to get to be at the Vic. I think one thing that Chicago helps me to do is to like scale how I've progressed, because it is so small. Like the changes are so small on a daily basis that sometimes you can't see them.
Right, right.
You know, sometimes it doesn't feel like my life is different or like.
And it's comparative. You live in LA.
It doesn't feel like I'm. Yeah,
right,
exactly.
Right,
like
right.
I know people that are. Turns out very, very, very successful. it doesn't I don't feel different. I don't feel like I'm better. You know what I mean? Like in terms of as a performer, you can't feel that on a day-to-day basis. But you come back and you see the markers that I remember from growing up here and from coming up here as a comic, and that really matters. So that's why it's like, that's why you go see the Cubs and get to go on the field or whatever.
Right.
That's why you, you know, go play the Vic, and that's why you go, I want to play the Chicago Theater because it matters. It's my hometown.
Well, let's get that Chicago Theater gig lined up. That's a no-brainer. Cameron Esposito, the pride of Western Springs.
I love that. That's beautiful.
Thanks for joining us.
It was so fun. Thank you for having me.